My father said I was making a big mistake. I was told it wouldn't work. He didn't want to take on more work and he didn't want more responsibility. And I looked at it as just opportunity. You know, I just looked at my wife. I said, look, if we don't make this change, this is how it's just going to be forever. It really didn't take too long to think it through. We knew what we had to do.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Brenton Cloud is carrying a family trade that dates back to 1934, but he had to leave the family business to build it in his own way. After hitting a ceiling inside his father's company, he and his wife sold their nearly paid off house and used the money to launch Greenhouse. The bet worked almost too well. Greenhouse grew from zero to about $10 million in roughly 3 years, but the speed created chaos. Too many accounts, too many hires, too many trucks, and a team Brenton could no longer fully recognize. Now, his challenge is learning how to grow without recreating the chaos while protecting the team, the customer experience, and the family life the business was meant to support. Brenton, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling. You know, as I talk about your introduction there, you sold a nearly paid off house with two kids at home to start a pest control company. Most people would call that reckless. Were they right?
Yeah. You know, the introduction was, starting to make me tear up because it's, I was told it wouldn't work. You know, I was told you're leaving where everybody wants to be, you know. We were living in paradise on Anna Marie Island, Longboat Key area. My father said I was making a big mistake. I think the words reckless was actually used.
And why do you think that that was the feedback that you were getting? And what gave you the confidence or at least the courage to go do it anyway?
I just knew that being status quo wasn't for me. My father and I were in two different places in our lives. He didn't want to take on more work and he didn't want more responsibility. And I looked at it as just opportunity. I think someone once told me that for younger generations, change is opportunity. And for older folks, change becomes a threat. I think it was a threat to him and it wasn't comfortable for him. You know, I just looked at my wife. I said, look, if we don't make this change, this is how it's just going to be forever. And so, I thought it through, but it really didn't take too long to think it through. We knew what we had to do.
So you start the company, you take the risk, and even leaving the company is really hitting the ceiling of sorts, right? Because you're growth oriented, you're driven, you want more, and you're inside this structure that is holding you back. So you take the courage, you take the leap, the entrepreneurial leap, you start building this company, it takes off. And just finish the sentence for me. So you build a company, $10 million in 3 years. It almost what?
Swallowed me whole.
Yeah.
If you let it, it will do just that. You know, we just had no systems in place for this. We knew we just wanted to be the biggest and the best. We just thought we'd always figure it out. You know, we really just shot from the hip and just bootstrapped it. And, my mentor, whom I'm sure we can talk about later on, but he was a very successful guy, okay? He is a very successful man. I met him because we were stealing his accounts, and he wanted to see me on a stick with my head cut off.
Okay, and, that's pretty dramatic.
he was madder than a cut snake. We were connected through a gentleman that is in the industry as well. And he said, I think you're going to like this guy. We got to get you two together. And we did get together and we ended up becoming the best of friends. He's like an older brother to me. You know, Steve sold his first company when he was 29 for 67, 69 million, somewhere in that range. Very driven, very successful man. But he was the one that told me, getting back to what we were just talking about, that inch by inch, life's a cinch. Mile by mile, it's a pile of crap. And I was just jumping the miles.
Yeah.
And you turn around, you got this big company, but are you really successful? Are you really profitable? Do you have your life in control? And the answer to all those questions was no.
Growing that fast, it creates a ton of chaos, right? I mean, just as you said, it swallows me whole. You think about taking that inch by inch, really just shrinking everything down to the smallest component part that you can. Where were the areas in the business that you focused that inch on? Because I'm sure you got lots and lots of things going on at one time. How did you think about making it small?
So the focus went to the people, because back then, if you had a pulse, we'd hire you.
Pulse check, hired.
All right, you're hired. Let's go. Yep. We got to move on. Next. I mean, we were hiring 5 people a day. I mean, it was crazy. You know, what happened was we had to sell a portion of the business to be able to deleverage and cut the business down to a size that we could manage. Okay. So we knew we wanted to be on the West Coast. We were on the West Coast because we had expanded to Orlando. We expanded to the East Coast of Florida, you know, and we were probably servicing, you know, 25% of the state. And we did that within a few years. To run a home service business that fast is just, it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea. You know, we thought, hey, this is what success looks like. Let's just keep going. But to answer your question, you know, we had to cut the business down to a size, a geographic area that we could manage. And then we just started focusing on the people. That really was the inch by inch. It was the people. You know, I know everybody talks about the right people, but I mean, it really matters. You got to have the right people. If you don't have the right butt in the right seat, they don't work out. And you know, you got it. We had to make sure that we had the right people, that they got it, they want it, they had the capacity to do it. You know, then we developed the core values, 5 non-negotiables, and we just kept just hiring and separating on those core values. And that was really the secret sauce. You know, we knew how to do pest control. We knew how to sell it. You know, that part is, I grew up in that industry, you know? I mean, I grew up in the back of my dad's pest control truck going job to job. I was probably the only kid in school, and they sent me to a private school. You know, all, you know, everyone had a lot of money, but we were just, you know, middle-class folks. And my dad would pick me up in a pickup truck with, you know, mud all over it. And there's a big termite on the side of it. You know, it was so embarrassing to me back then. Yeah. You know, it was so embarrassing, but this is my life. I realized that this is my, you know, this is who I am. This is who we are as a family. It runs in our blood. As you said, almost 100 years in pest control. So the work itself is easy. It's just finding the right people.
We see this over and over and over again in the thousands and thousands of companies that we work with. Grown really fast, you tend to just try some things, right? You're hiring 5 people a day, low standards. If you can fog up a mirror, you're hired. I'm really curious, what was the dumbest thing you bought during the growth spike that you'd never buy again?
I didn't realize that you could get rental vehicles as trucks and use them to operate with. I didn't realize, the thought had never crossed my mind. And, you know, in the summertime, we would sell a lot of accounts because that's when the bugs come out, right? So that's when we'd be getting, you know, tons of accounts all day long, you know, hundreds of new customers. You know, you have to get all these employees quickly hired to service all these accounts. But once all the accounts are under your belt, you can then go and service them quarterly. But to get them all serviced very quickly, you got to have a lot more people than you really actually need. So we went out and just were buying truck after truck after truck after truck. And then when the summer was over, we realized we had all these trucks we didn't need. So yeah. I spent some money on some things that really hurt, and I had to sit there and watch those trucks idle and make payments on them, and that really hurt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the mistakes that everybody makes growing a company, some of it can be really predictable, but at the same time, and I always quote my mentor, Gino Wickman, on this, is there's things I can teach you and there's things you need to learn on your own. And the wisdom is to know the difference between the two. Do you think if you had a mentor at the time who were like, Brenton, don't buy the trucks, just go and rent them because this is what's going to happen to you? Or would it just not enter into the universe? And now it's a lesson that you had to learn on your own. You learned from the failure, and now you're telling other people who are in the same situation, hey, just so you know, you can rent these things.
Oh my God. If I had had a mentor back then, things would have been a lot different. But you know, you can't live in the past.
No.
But you know, having a mentor, that is actually, I feel, one of my strengths with all the businesses that I've done. I've always been really good at eventually finding the people that are the best in the industry that have done it, that have gained experience. You know, Steve just fell into my lap, you know. You know, one of my salespeople knocked on someone's door that knew this other guy that knew Steve. I mean, it happened by chance, but having a mentor in any business, I think it's paramount.
I think having that tribe of mentors helping you who have been there and done that, they've been through, you know, they've made the mistakes, and you can borrow a lot from those mentors. And yet I still do think that there's things that no matter who tells you, you a growth-oriented, driven entrepreneur will inevitably say, well, I bet I can do a little bit different. I bet I can do this better than you did. And I know it failed for you, but I'm going to give it a shot. And sometimes it actually creates a breakthrough, but because I just don't think that there's too much learning outside of failure. But the failure doesn't always have to be yours, for sure. Anything else in the business, like the trucks, that you're like, hey, there's this failure that ultimately caused the progress. It caused the learning that you then went and created something bigger and better as a result of. Because people don't like to fail, but I think it's necessary.
I go back to the people. Well, you know, hiring the wrong people, you know, you lay with dogs, you're going to get fleas. And you're going to have a lot of issues. You're going to have, you know, you're going to deal with legal issues. You're going to deal with battles and fights with these people, because when you bring in the wrong, I always call it the castle, right? The core values, it determines who we bring into the castle and who we keep and who we separate with. And, you know, what cost me a lot of money was hiring the wrong people and buying too many trucks.
Right. You know, during those real high growth years, I'm sure you were burning the midnight oil and spending a lot of time, especially not having the right people in the right seats, that often you're cleaning up what other people should be doing. And if your wife was sitting here in this podcast, what would she say those midnight office years actually cost you?
Oof, that's a sore subject. It's the kids. You know, we were just doing it at all costs. We were, you know, there was no other option besides success and huge and beating the drum. We had other people raising our kids. And that's, it, I don't know why it didn't bother me back then, but now that's one of the things that I have regrets about is, other people raising my children. We had, nannies that lived with us. We had babies, you know, little guys, two little boys. One was just born, as you said at the beginning. The other was 2 years old when we started Greenhouse. And these are the most precious years. You just don't get back. And we had one nanny that started at 6 a.m. and she'd go till 4, and then another one that started at 4, and she put the kids to bed. And there was a lot of bedtimes that I never did, and I would be gone before they would wake up. And same goes with my wife. And, you know, right around when we discovered EOS, you know, right around the same time that we cut the business in half, and we, you know, made all those big changes. But we just, one of the big factors also was like, we got to get the family together. We can't sacrifice our children's childhood just for this thing, because, you know, it's like my mentor told me, you've got the rest of your life to make money. Don't miss out on their childhood.
And you're pretty fortunate that you got that message as soon as you did, because many don't. we can justify, well, I'm doing this for the family because this thing has to make it. It has to survive. And you just say, you kind of create all these justifications for it. From your point of view, do you see other entrepreneurs? Is it just us?
Yeah, everybody wants it insta now. It's a problem when you're young, because I just drove from our Bradenton office and I sat down with the managers, 23. And I told him, I said, look, man, I was 23 too, and you want everything yesterday. That's the biggest hurdle that you're going to face when you're in your 20s, especially being, the alpha male that I was, that you just really get short-sighted and you don't understand that good things take time. It really takes time and it takes patience. And what really good thing can you build without patience and care? If you're 16 years old and you're starting an app, that's a totally different thing, right? But when you're building a service business that requires people to service other people, you got to groom that. You got to really spend time on that, because that just doesn't happen overnight. But I mean, you look at my mentor, he's going to turn 60 here soon, and he started his pest control company nine years ago, right? So maybe when he was 50, they're going to do 40 million this year. That's a company that's worth over $250 million, and he started at 50.
That's remarkable.
But it took time. It took him probably, I think in the first 5 years of business, he was only at 5 million, right? Mm-hmm. We've been in business for almost 8 years and we'll do 5.7 million this year. But it was that process in the beginning for the first 5 years I've seen of him is where it was working on the hedgehog concept, perfecting his craft. Hedgehogs are good at one thing, tuck and roll, right? Tuck and roll. And, it took time to get the right butt in the right seat, to perfect the hedgehog concept, to get the core values in line, to get the right people. And then it was a breakout moment that he had. So it wasn't 0 to 40 million overnight. It was more like 0 to 5 in 5 years, then 8 and then 10. And then it just started to pick up really quickly, right? Because he had it all in place.
And that just creates the overall system, the processes, the platform to grow off of without the massive amounts of chaos. Now, of course, you'll always hit the ceiling, but now by that time, you've got the skills and the abilities to slow down. You don't have to take such a drastic cut like you had to. So you went from 0 to 10 and then you went back down. How far did you cut down to? And now you built back up to 5.7?
So we had around 5 million in revenue when we separated. And then what happened was we kept going down because we just didn't have, we weren't prepared for that. When you start separating a company and you're dividing and you're replacing people and you're working on systems and processes that were never there before, there was a bit of a learning curve, and we dropped down a lot, and it took us time to climb back up. But now we're growing at 15% a year, which for a pest control company is phenomenal. Maybe not for, a tech company, but for our space, even to get to 5 million is very tough. Most of the owner operators in this industry rarely make it to a million, very rare. To climb back up was a huge accomplishment. There's actually a P&L over here. You can't see it. And it was the worst revenue we had after we had sold half the business. And I printed it out and I hung up. It says, never forget where you came from.
Yeah, what a lesson. So what's a deal or a market that you said no to in this past year that the old Brenton would have chased?
Just before this call. there's a company that wants to sell to us. It's a shiny object, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the downfall for the visionary, is turning down the shiny objects, right? Always looking for the next opportunity. Whereas really it's the hedgehog concept that we got to focus on. because all the other shiny things would just distract you and potentially hurt you. And so, it's very easy in this industry to grow when you acquire. That's why private equity is just all over this business, because the majority of the industry is controlled by mom and pops. It's highly fragmented. And so it's easy to roll up all these little companies and make a really big profitable one. We're not ready for acquisitions yet. We're just not, one day we will be, but I had to turn them down and say, we're just not ready for that right now.
Now, when we think about hitting the ceiling, right? You've hit the ceiling multiple times. You're on a good growth path now. What ceilings do you see that you're hitting now? Where are the areas that you think you could simplify? Which are the areas that you think, hey, I could do a little better at predicting or delegating? Do you have the right structure in place? Do you have the right systems in place?
So systems and structure, I mean, that's all there. Okay. No issues there. Hitting the ceiling, when you say that, what I think of is management. That's what's going to limit you to grow, is having talent around you that can step in and become managers. Because not everybody can be a manager, and that's not a bad thing. It doesn't make you a bad employee. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just means that you're just not the right role for you. And although we're very good at finding good quality employees that are some of the best people, it doesn't necessarily mean they're always managers, right? They're great at their job, but they're just not, some people just aren't really, don't have that, nor do they want it. So I think that the biggest hurdle for us hitting the ceiling, because we can grow and take this thing anywhere. I can go anywhere in the state. I can leave the state and go to Texas. I can go to Georgia, but I can't do it without managers in place. And so that takes time. And we're learning that right now. We're trying to break through that ceiling on, not only hiring really talented people that meet all of our core values, but also have the ability to step into management roles one day.
And what are you doing to train them? We hear this all the time. Hey, Mark, what do you recommend for leadership training, for management training of my people? I think it does take time. I don't think that there's like some online course you can go take and all of a sudden you're a great manager. So how do you think about training them? What resources and tools and time, attention are you giving them to build that strength?
So, I mean, I'm going to be like a broken record. I'm sorry. I'm going to say a lot of the same things. I am at every single interview, even today, right? We got four branches, right? We got people all over the place. I am still at every single interview, and I'm usually the last person they speak to. And my job is to come in there and go over these core values. And as long as they understand these core values, and I meet with them 30 days and 60 days from that exact meeting, and I quiz them on these core values, we can determine within those 60 days if this is the right person for the job. And if it's the right person for the job, training isn't that difficult. Okay? It's not very difficult. So that's a big thing. And then also, we used to do a week of training for a lot of folks, and it costs us a lot more money, but we do it now for 2 full weeks. It's half a month. We just spend a lot of time with these people, making sure that that they really understand what's expected of them. So I think it was lengthening the period of training, which inevitably costs you more money because they're not producing, and also doing those core values at the beginning, and then me going back 30 days and going back 60 days and reinforcing them. I think that's what's really made a big impact.
When you've got the right people, they share your core values. Now, when you're hiring them, you got to obviously make sure that they get, they want, and have the capacity to do the job really, really well. And if the seat's too big, the seat's too small, you have other seats, you can move them around as long as they're that culture fit, that core value fit. Have you made any, we'll call it right seat discoveries where they're total core value fit, but you put them in a role, oh, it's too big. They start to fail at that. Or maybe the seat that they're sitting in is too small. They have a much bigger capability and they start to get a little bit bored. And maybe you think it's a core values issue, but really they're just bored because the job is too easy for them. Have you had any of those situations?
That's not really how it works here. You know, we're pretty dang good at figuring out very quickly within those first 60 days, you know, who belongs and who doesn't. Going back to earlier, what we were talking about, that's what's going to cost you a lot.
So much.
You know, so you better make sure that, you know, who you're bringing into the castle is with you. So we don't really have a lot of that. And I know what you're talking about because we talk about an EOS, you know, some people get it and want it, but don't have the capacity to do it, or does has the capacity, but doesn't get it, or maybe doesn't have the bandwidth and we got to change roles. I don't really see a lot of that here. I think it's just all about in the beginning, weeding out in the very beginning, you know, before they get settled in, you know, you got to really make sure that this is the one, because you make that mistake and it can cost you.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So, random question for you in terms of everyone's talking about AI and everyone's talking about how, you know, the world is going to never, no one's going to have a job and the bots are going to take over. And You have a business that to me is seemingly AI proof. You're a pretty resistant to AI type business, which I suspect is why private equity and other investors are very interested in the space, aside from the baby boomers retiring and there's this transition of wealth. But how are you using AI in your business, if at all, to make doing what you do better, faster, cheaper for yourself and for the customer?
Scheduling is important. You know, route efficiency is everything for us. We call it windshield time, right? You don't want windshield time. You got windshield time, guys in front of a windshield, you're not making money. So it's helped us. You know, we do have some technology. Don't ask me about technology because I am not the guy, okay? Scheduling, we've used AI to optimize scheduling and routing, making sure that, you know, we're running the routes efficiently. So we're going little stops between houses and we're hitting all the folks, you know, close together. That's helped out a lot. And also on the SEO side, I can't give you all the secrets, you know, SEO it's everything. It really is. You know, I mean, you could spend as much money as you want on pay-per-click and LSA, but if they can't find you because they're using ChatGPT, then you're done. We utilize some AI technology for content, developing content for the website, for blogs, for social media and all that stuff. But really at the end of the day, it's all about the reviews. You know, we're 5-star rated and 3 of the 4 branches. 1 branch is 4.9. You know, we have over almost 6,000 5-star reviews in just 1 branch alone. So I think, yes, AI will not destroy my industry in a very long time. You know, when they have robots one day, maybe, but still, you're not going to get a robot that develops a relationship with the homeowner.
Right, right. So, you know, kind of doing a little bit of time travel. If you had to go back in time, knowing what you know now, and we talked about the people, we talked about buying the trucks, what piece of advice would you give to your younger self or another entrepreneur who's just starting out in pest control or elsewhere? What's that one piece of advice, maybe a couple points that you'd give to them that would really help them be more successful, get more of what they want from their business and their life?
Probably just take your time. You know, I mean, we all know the saying, Rome wasn't built in a day, but nothing good comes without time, you know, and don't get hung up on the money because, you know, that's the last thing you should get hung up on. And take care of yourself and your family, you know, and take time with your business. You know, it's like Sam Walton said when they asked him how he did it, right? How he built Walmart. His response is, you know, one day we just got after it and we stayed after it. But I say, yeah, you get after it, you stay after it, but you don't sacrifice your family. You don't sacrifice your life. because you got the rest of your life to do this, right? And it's okay if it happens at 60, 70. You know, the T. Boone Pickens didn't start becoming successful till he was well into his 60s. Colonel Sanders came up with a recipe for KFC. I think he was 70, you know, and I think that especially with this time and age, we just want everything now and we want it quick. I was susceptible to that. I was guilty of that. So my advice would be to, you know, take your time, find a mentor inch by inch.
Love it. Love it. Well, Brenton, I appreciate the conversation and sharing your wisdom with our listeners, with our audience and the EOS community. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thinking about Brenton Cloud, really starting with simplify. Brenton learned that faster growth was not automatically better growth. After Greenhouse grew too quickly, he had to simplify the business by cutting it down to a manageable geographic area and focusing on the west coast of Florida instead of trying to service too much of the state at once. His current discipline is saying no to shiny objects, especially acquisitions, because the company just isn't ready for that kind of complexity yet. He recognizes that focusing in on the hedgehog concept really matters more than chasing every opportunity that comes up. The big simplification lesson really is to take the business inch by inch and not mile by mile. And that's the way he's going to win, by simplifying. Next is delegate. Brenton's current ceiling is management capacity. He believes Greenhouse can expand into new markets, but not without managers who can lead those locations without everything depending on him. He's personally involved with every interview, which shows strong cultural control, but it also points to the next delegation challenge, building leaders who can protect the company's standards without Brenton being the final filter forever until the end of time. So the company's ability to scale now really depends on finding people who can move from being great employees into those true management roles. Next is the ability to predict. Brenton learned prediction the hard way through really rapid growth. Buying too many trucks during the summer rush created a painful crash and capacity problem once demand then normalized, leaving the company with vehicles that it just couldn't use, really couldn't pay for. He now understands the importance of anticipating seasonal demand and staffing needs and balancing that service capacity with the growth and committing resources. And he knows that how to work that balance now. Greenhouse also uses technology and AI for scheduling and route efficiency, helping reduce windshield time, improve predictability in those daily operations. And that's part of systemizing. The company's early chaos came from growing without systems. And Brenton says that Greenhouse had no systems in place and was shooting from the hip while trying to become the biggest and the best at the same time. And that turnaround came when he began hiring and separating based on his values, running the business, being focused on people. He has those five non-negotiable core values, and that's a system to make sure that you have all the right people in the right seats. He also expanded the training process from 1 week to 2 full weeks and added a 30 and 60 day core value check-ins with all of his people, creating that more repeatable system for evaluating whether someone belongs in the company or not. And that leads us to structure, where Brenton really says systems and structure are now all largely in place, but the next structural ceiling that he's going to hit is really that management depth, delegating and elevating himself out so he can create that self-managing business. That structure can support the expansion of the company into new markets, and he can go back on the growth path in a healthy way. So the company had to restructure because of overexpansion early on, selling part of the business, shrinking its geographic footprint to really rebase the business, replacing people, rebuilding around much clearer roles is how he got back to that base of profitability and growth. And so, as I said, the next level of structure is building that leadership bench so you can support new branches, new territories without recreating problems of the past. If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.